This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of December the 16th, 2019. I'm Mason King.
Staying on top of breaking news, Celadon Group is filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy.
It is a massive trucking company based here in Indianapolis that just announced this morning it will shut down all of its business operations today.
If you haven't been paying close attention to the trucking industry and to Indianapolis-based Celadon Group, besides noticing some of its 10,000 trailers on the highway, its demise on December the 9th probably seemed very sudden. Of course, the firm had been in the news the week before when it was hit with a double whammy from the feds. Its former chief operating officer, Eric Meek, and its chief financial officer, Bobby Peebler, were indicted for their alleged roles in what the Department of Justice described as a complex securities and accounting fraud scheme. In addition, the two are facing a civil suit from the Securities and Exchange Commission, and both the civil and criminal cases say these former executives were involved in buying and selling trucks at inflated values to make Celadon's financial condition appear stronger than it actually was. A lot of new details became available, but the basics were already public knowledge. Celadon didn't go out of business due to the indictments and civil suit earlier this month. Its slide into bankruptcy began years earlier. You can make an argument for tracing it all the way back to 2012 and the retirement of Celadon's CEO and co-founder, Steve Russell. Observers and even Celadon's outside auditor threw up red flags along the way. There were obvious issues with its executive culture, packed with graduates from the same small college. And perhaps most disappointing for the 4,000 Celadon employees losing their jobs last week, there was a moment in June 2018 when it looked like Celadon could pull out of its mess and get back on its feet. A subpoena from the Department of Justice scuttled the deal at the last second. IBJ has been covering Celadon's slide all along the way, and with me in the studio today are IBJ editor Greg Andrews and reporter Susan Orr to help us understand what happened. Guys, thanks for making time today.
Happy to be here.
Thanks.
Okay, so let's bring everybody up to speed. As I briefly mentioned before, Steve Russell, he co-founded Celadon in 1985. And from my recollection, he was a very well-known, very well-liked guy in Indianapolis as the face of the company. And Greg, kind of take us back a little bit. Remind us, you know, who he was and how he was known in Indianapolis.
Okay. He grew up in New York City. He was the son of a cab driver. He was very accomplished professionally. So he kind of straddled both worlds of being able to relate to everyday people. He was very popular with the drivers, but he had 2 degrees from Cornell. Prior to starting Celadon, he had worked as an executive at Hertz and at Ford. He started his company in 1985 and basically decided to put it here for the reasons that a lot of transportation-related businesses are here, to be in the crossroads of America. He was very involved in the arts in Indianapolis, Indianapolis Museum of Art, Phoenix Theater. He was a guy who tended to use salty language. I remember attending an event once where someone, this wasn't salty language, but somebody said to him, "Oh, you like Indianapolis, so you must be pleased to be able to go to Shapiro's to get a good corned beef sandwich." And his response was, "Anybody who says that does not know what a real New York deli is like." So he was proud of his New York ties, but he really became a big player in the business community here.
I remember I interviewed him, I think in 2009. Obviously, this was after 9/11, and he had a huge blown up photo of the Twin Towers in his office, which to him was kind of like a totem to like kind of death and rebirth. It was a way of like inspiring himself to help rebuild Celadon, which, I mean, had, like everything else during the recession, had gone through some hard times. So, I mean, he was like a real raconteur, as I recall, and an emotional guy. Mm-hmm. In 2012, in his early 70s, Russell stepped down as CEO. In 2015, he relinquished the role of chairman, and both of those positions went to Paul Will, who had been Celadon's president and COO. And as I mentioned, the trucking industry seemed like it was struggling at the time, certainly during the recession, but even after. Susan, what was going on, basically? What were the market conditions like?
Well, in 2015, actually, the trucking revenues were at an all-time high. Industry-wide, it was $726 billion. The next year, in 2016, they had gone down to $676 billion, so a big drop in 1 year. That's one thing about the trucking industry. It's just very cyclical because they're not making anything on their own. They're dependent on what other people are making. And so when manufacturing has ups and downs, that affects trucking, how much supply there is to be moved around the country, how many trucks there are. It doesn't help that there's been just a severe trucker shortage for years. So you can only go down so far on wages because you're looking for truckers, and so you've got to pay them to motivate them to join you. So really all those things, depending on what's happening with your individual trucking company, they can make your good times better, or if you're struggling and then the trucking economy collapses, it can definitely make a bad thing worse.
So one of the things that Celadon did around this time in the teens was to grow its truck leasing business, and it went from 750 tractors in 2013 to more than 11,000 in 2016. Why was that? Why was that one of their strategies?
One of the strategies in the post-Steve Russell age was to kind of diversify some of the things that they did within the transportation space, and they established the strategy where they would buy tractors, which is the front, the cab part of the truck where the driver sits, and they would lease those to independent operators who would drive for Celadon, but they wouldn't actually be company employees. Then the drivers would be making lease payments directly to Celadon. When those trucks got to a certain age and Celadon didn't want to keep them in its fleet, it would turn around and sell them to other people. So that was why they grew the tractors so much in that short time.
So Steve Russell then dies in 2016, and that is the year when prosecutors allege that the accounting fraud began. So Greg, describe what happened.
Basically, the issue that Quality Companies leasing division, truck leasing division was facing is their trucks had plunged in value for various reasons. One, weakness in the industry. Another was that they had a large number of a certain type of truck that was known to have mechanical problems, so it couldn't be sold at the kind of price that a truck that was problem-free would be sold for. If you have something that's plunged in value and then you go sell it, if you're doing things on the up and up, you have to record a loss on that transaction. But they didn't want to do that, according to what prosecutors say. So what they did is they worked with a local truck dealer in Indianapolis that we've identified as Stoops Freightliner, and they were able to persuade, according to prosecutors, Stoops Freightliner to participate in this scheme to hide the losses. And the way they hid the losses, basically, was by Stoops Freightliner overpaid for the trucks that were sold, but then when Celadon turned around and bought other trucks, they overpaid for those trucks. If that makes sense, that masked the loss.
And they did this because they didn't want to show the loss.
They didn't want to fess up that they had taken a bath on this division. They wanted to make it appear everything was humming along, according to prosecutors.
So fairly early, it seemed like there was some skepticism from the outside. A fellow named Jay Yoon of Summit Ridge Partners began questioning Celadon's accounting in 2016, doing so on that investing website, Seeking Alpha. So Greg, what did Yoon find exactly? Or what was he alleging?
In his first column written in July 2016, he's just raising some general skepticism. For one thing, this truck leasing division was an off-balance sheet venture, and off-balance sheet ventures can raise red flags because there's not the same transparency to really see what's going on. So he was suspicious of that, and there were some technical things where he didn't think the balance sheet and the cash flow statements seemed to square exactly. So he was basically saying there's smoke here, but at that point he didn't have a smoking gun. Then, probably because he wrote that original column, in December he wrote another column with the headline, "A Smoking Gun Emerges." He said he had an inside source who told him all about that truck swap with Stoops, and so he wrote all about it at that point. And that was the first time questions had been raised publicly by anyone about that particular transaction.
Now, the accounting firm BKD, which was Celadon's outside auditor, stepped up its scrutiny of the transaction and questioned the executive team about the propriety of the truck deals. Susan, do you recall what the executive said and then what BKD, how they reacted?
According to the criminal indictment unsealed last week, BKD really was questioning the firm on, were these transactions, were they independent of each other, and were the trucks correctly valued? And according to the indictment, the executives repeatedly said, yes, these were appropriate values for these trucks, and no, these were independent. One deal was not dependent on the other. And of course, the prosecutors are saying that that is not the case. In April 5th of 2017, the Celadon executives actually made a presentation on this topic to both Celadon's board and to BKD. Just a few weeks later, on April 25th, BKD announced it was withdrawing its reports on Celadon's recent financial statements. In other words, BKD saying we're no longer confident that these are actually accurate.
And that's a huge deal, as I recall. That really just doesn't happen.
Well, when it does happen, it's not good news. But yeah, you're right. That's not the common thing.
And the stock price plunged as a result.
Okay, guys, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor. This is the IBJ Podcast.
The IBJ podcast is brought to you by Krieg DeVault, a trusted and dynamic law firm representing a wide variety of local, regional, and national clients. Committed to each other and to every client, Krieg DeVault prides itself on integrity, professionalism, respect, and excellence. Financial institutions, global manufacturers, national healthcare providers, and successful organizations of all sizes and market focus rely on Krieg DeVault to create innovative and successful business solutions. Connect today at www.kriegdevault.com.
All right, we're back with this week's edition of the IBJ podcast, and we're speaking with IBJ editor Greg Andrews and reporter Susan Orr about what led to the collapse of trucking giant Celadon last week. And here's another wrinkle about some of the skepticism about these deals I found was really interesting. As early as 2017, the investment firm Prescience Point Research Group was publicly accusing the company of accounting fraud. And one of the things that they made a point of flagging was that at least five managers at Celadon, all in their 30s, had come from Franklin College, which is a tiny school right here in central Indiana. And in a report on Celadon, Prescience straight out said, quote, incestuous hiring practices and nepotism may have created an environment lacking in accountability and ripe for fraud, end quote. Well, that was super surprising. So who were these guys, and what was the connection to Franklin?
They all were accounting graduates, the ones I focused on. The three who have been indicted were all accounting graduates. Two of them graduated in 2002 from Franklin. One of them graduated in 2006 from Franklin. Certainly anyone going to school at Franklin at that time, graduating the same year with the same major, they knew each other. I'm not privy to exactly who was friends with whom at what time, but it seems apparent that Franklin College graduates liked bringing in other Franklin College graduates. Obviously, Prescience raises fraud questions about that, but I think on the most basic level, you have to wonder if that is the hiring approach. Are they hiring the best people possible for these jobs? This is a major trucking company, certainly among the big ones in the whole country, and there's a lot of talent out there. Are they going for the top talent if they're hiring their either friends or people at least that they feel a connection with because of the Franklin College tie? My suspicion is that these guys thought they were a little smarter than they were. They're only in their 30s running the major truck company. Around this time, they also decided to build a $24 million headquarters in Hancock County. They ended up pulling the plug on that project, but they didn't seem to fully grasp the gravity of some of the bets they were making.
Did I remember that some of them were in the same fraternity?
Right.
Do you recall which one?
Sigma Alpha Epsilon.
So let's do a fast forward montage. In May 2017, there's a big management shakeup. It's obvious there's a lot of trouble brewing. Paul Will leaves as CEO in July of that year, replaced by Paul Svinland, who's a turnaround expert in the industry. In October, Celadon acknowledged that it was under investigation by the SEC, though it wasn't clear what for. In 2018, Celadon said that its own internal investigation found that it had likely overstated its earnings by as much as $250 million during a three-year period that ended in 2016. In April 2018, Celadon was delisted from the New York Stock Exchange due to its financial reporting problems. Now, in June of 2018, Svinland apparently had put together a refinancing deal that he still thinks would have saved the company. Greg, what had he done?
He said he had lined up $200 million in financing and was all set to close on that. The deal, as he put it, was on the one-yard line when the company got a subpoena from the Department of Justice for the criminal investigation. He says if it were not for that, the company would have made it. He said that in an email. Basically, initially, after the company closed, he said he wanted to make no comment, but I sent him an email saying, do you think the company would have made it were not for these, you know, alleged bad actors? And that was his response.
Now, fast forward to April 2019, April of this year, Celadon agreed to pay a huge amount of money to settle securities fraud charges. Susan, what happened?
Celadon agreed to pay $42.2 million in restitution to shareholders over this whole issue. At that time, the person who had been the president of Quality Companies, his name was Danny Williams, he pleaded guilty to several charges that were all related to that. So the deal was that Celadon would agree to pay $5 million within, I think, the first 90 days after the settlement came out, and then it would pay additional amounts over time.
And that seems like an awful lot of money.
It is a lot of money, and I think especially when you're struggling, that's just going to be one more hurdle to deal with.
So to bring us up to December, Meek and Peebler were indicted for their alleged roles in the fraud scheme earlier this month. But this isn't why Celadon shut down its operations on December the 9th, I don't think. What in totality, what's the full picture of why Celadon had to close?
I think it really comes down to the financing issue. I think it was July. After lengthy trying, Celadon did come into some new financing with some new lenders I think it was three times since then they went back and revised the covenants of that. And so that might be an indication that things were not going so well, because you don't routinely renegotiate those if you don't have to. So I think it was really just their money ran out. And it's hard to say what the timing was with the indictments, because everything traces back, not everything, but a lot of it traces back to the problems that got them into legal trouble. But to the outside observer, it does look like the indictments kind of triggered this. And that's not entirely true, but they are related, I think.
When you're having financial trouble, it certainly doesn't help to have a giant cloud of scandal hanging over your company. In a bankruptcy filing, in the day of the bankruptcy filing, a Celadon official basically laid out the final months and said that starting in July, the trucking industry really weakened. And so that was a new challenge that was adding to basically the rates that were being paid to haul freight were falling. And so that was fouling up the economics of their turnaround. Little by little, the lenders got more and more tight-fisted and were unwilling basically to keep giving them more flexibility. So in fact, a couple of weeks ago, one of the lenders filed a lawsuit against Celadon that we hadn't previously been aware of. Ultimately, I guess lenders ran out of patience and Celadon had nowhere to turn to get any relief.
So what happens next? Could there be more charges?
Well, the most obvious thing that happens next is the bankruptcy works its way through, and bankruptcies sometimes get resolved quickly, but oftentimes they don't. And I have just a feeling that because of the complexity of this company and the size of it, that it may take quite a while for things to unwind there. As far as charges, my understanding is, yes, there could be. Is that how you understand it, Greg?
I asked the U.S. Attorney's Office earlier this week, could there be more charges? And they basically said, our investigation is continuing. We'll take the investigation where the facts lead us, which certainly doesn't rule out that possibility. The parties that I think people wonder about are the former CEO, Paul Will. He was over the company during this entire period when the prosecutors say the fraud occurred, yet he has not been charged. It's not very flattering to him either way. If he didn't know about what was going on, he didn't seem very attentive to the situation. And if he did know, then he would be culpable. And then the Stoops Freightliner enabled the fraud, according to prosecutors, and no charges have been brought against anyone there at this point.
Now that we've reached at least the end of another chapter of the story, what's the thing about this whole episode that has surprised you the most?
I guess I'm surprised that things were so dire that there was no attempt even to reorganize in bankruptcy court. There are a couple of smaller divisions of Celadon that are continuing on for now, and the company is going to try to get value from those businesses by selling them. From what I understand, that's why it was filed as a Chapter 11, which is typically a reorganization. They obviously would have tried to reorganize the entire company, including the core trucking business, if they thought they had a hope of succeeding at doing that.
Susan, what do you think?
I would agree with Greg. Is it just how fast, once the bankruptcy was filed, just how quickly everything shut down? I would say within a day or two after the bankruptcy, their website is not even working anymore.
Wow.
I think their Twitter account seems to be suspended too. So that was striking. The other thing, not so much surprising, but it just reiterated how desperate the industry shortage for drivers is. that even over the weekend before Celadon filed for bankruptcy, when it was just a bunch of rumors, you would not believe the number of recruiters from other companies that were getting on Facebook pages devoted to the situation and saying, hey, drivers, we're sorry for your loss, but come work for us. Some of them were offering that rather than going home, the drivers would be welcome to come straight to their training facility and get right plugged into a job. So if you had to look for a silver lining, I guess that's it, that the drivers at Celadon seem pretty well poised to get another job without too much of a delay. If they want to.
That's a good thing right before Christmas.
That's true.
Well, let's check in a few months and see how the bankruptcy's going.
Yeah, for sure.
Thanks for your time, guys.
Thank you.
Yep.
My thanks again to Greg and Susan. Hey, in this week's edition of IBJ, Greg has more on the factors potentially leading to Celadon's collapse. Also in this week's paper, Kurt Christian takes the measure of a wave of new developments in Fishers along 106th Street, which was the next logical platform for growth after the large crop of projects that sprung up around IKEA on 116th Street. And Anthony Shutley explains how security device maker Allegion is using its North American headquarters in Carmel to speed up innovation. It has created a studio where products can go from concept to market in less than 120 days. You can see all of these stories in the latest print edition of IBJ, which you, of course, have delivered to your home or office, or online at ibj.com. And remember, for full and unfettered access to all of IBJ's award-winning content, just hit the subscribe button. Thanks for making time this week for the IBJ podcast, which is edited by Leslie Weidenbender. I'm Mason King, and we'll be back again next week.